Now, Karen, some people will say, and there's been some research that some people think indicates that you can't train a mind. That you know, in other words, training mental muscles is just an analogy that doesn't apply to this immaterial thing called the mind. I haven't found that to be true in my own experience. It seems to me there is mental training that does occur. Have you witnessed that? I mean, we've used analogies like, you know, the six pack of the mind that the students are exercising, developing, or exercising mental muscles. But how have you actually seen that happen? Because, you know, what evidence have you encountered that shows that in fact this kind of training does spill over into other areas?
Well, first, I think it's a funny argument to say you can't train your mind. Is there a part of the body that we don't train? We can train our muscles. Mm-hmm. We can train our stomach, mm-hmm. you know, our eating habits. Mm-hmm. We can train our eyes mm-hmm. to watch for certain things. We can train our ears and our sense of smell to detect certain things. Mm-hmm. So why can't we train our mind? Mm-hmm. And if we can't train our mind, then how do we explain the development of an infant or a toddler to someone who can discover complex chemical formulae that cure disease? Mm-hmm. That just seems a bit odd to me. I mean, the thinking there is that we're just filling it with information. Mm-hmm. But I would go back to Plutarch, who says, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, mm-hmm. but a fire to be kindled. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the study of Latin and classical education is all about. Let's mm-hmm. kindle a fire, mm-hmm. and let's teach them how to use that fire. Mm-hmm. So getting back now to evidence, how I see that, you know, I see young men and women who struggled in Latin their first couple of years. Maybe mm-hmm. didn't click mm-hmm. right off the bat. One young lady comes to mind. She just completed her sixth grade year, and she's one that has struggled in her English classes mm-hmm. in reading and recognizing word forms. But she's now had 3 years of Latin, and when you look at her where she was, and you look at her where she is now, she's made vast improvement, mm-hmm. more so than would be expected. Mm-hmm. But she's making a lot of connections. Her skills in Latin are improving, but her skills in all her subjects around her are improving vastly. Mm-hmm. And because of the connections that I see in her language arts classes, English, mm-hmm. reading, mm-hmm. Along with her Latin, I really believe the Latin is helping some of that along. But mm-hmm. really, her mind is training and is developing. Mm-hmm. Again, if I jump up a few years to my students who are juniors and seniors, like this one gentleman who writes very well, well, I see him beginning to incorporate things that we've read in Latin when we studied Virgil's Aeneid together mm-hmm. into his English compositions. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily mythology, but some of the rhetorical devices mm-hmm. that we learned and studied. Mm-hmm. Some juxtaposition, some alliteration, anaphora, mm-hmm. some of these things that we study and see in Latin. And I see him carrying these same images, these same ideas, mm-hmm. but in a different way, in a different twist. Mm-hmm. So I have to say, well, he must be getting some training, some mm-hmm. exercise, mm-hmm. and not just filling his head with data on what mm-hmm. Virgil wrote, but being able to take it, twist it, and mm-hmm. present it as something new and different mm-hmm. in his own original creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been my experience, too. You see students acquiring skills and techniques and also habits of mind and thought. And granted, perhaps some of the intellectual habits or virtues that come from the study of Latin could come from other places. It certainly does come from Latin, this idea of a careful attention to the meaning of words and mm-hmm. how they work, the study structure of a language, and then eventually the beauty of it, the aesthetic quality, which gets into rhetoric, which you were alluding to when you mentioned anaphora and so forth. It seems that when you study grammar in another language, it really, in a new way, enables you to see the grammar of your native tongue.
Right.
And to become better at it. It's somewhat tedious to have to study the back of your hand. It's somewhat tedious to have to study English grammar, because mm-hmm. we do learn it by 24/7 immersion. But when you... I remember, to give a personal example, studying Latin as an 18-year-old in college, it was the first time I really understood several English grammatical
yes.
concepts. You know, where my eyes may have glazed over when I was studying, you know, what a gerund was in English. in order to successfully translate the sentence in Latin, I really had to know it, and the lights came on and so forth. And I know you've seen that too. But leaving that argument aside, because it occasionally comes up that Latin is only good for Latin, and sounds to me like both you and I and you know, thousands of other Latin teachers would say no, it's not true. It's got many, many benefits. Well, you mentioned third grade Latin, students studying Latin in third grade. Why study that early?
Why not?
Okay. there's only so many subjects that a student can handle. Again, aren't we displacing something important in the curriculum to make a third grader study Latin?
I don't think we're displacing at all. I think we're coming alongside and reinforcing. What we see in these young children is that they have an inclination towards memorization. They love memorization. Mm-hmm. And so it's a great place to begin. Now, again, I'm going to be careful here. Latin study doesn't begin and end with memorization in third grade, mm-hmm. but it's an important component because they are little sponges, mm-hmm. and they love soaking things up. Mm-hmm. And so when you begin Latin in the third grade, you can get some of those grammar and fundamental things solidified while they have a propensity to learn and memorize, while they have a love for memorizing and chanting and singing. And that way, when they get a little bit older, they've got that toolbox all filled up. They've got their tools all laid out. They know how to use them, and they can really tackle, or I guess tackle's the wrong word, enjoy reading because they have all this behind them. But like I said, it wouldn't stop with memorization. Even simple sentences, they love it. They really enjoy it. And even then, we're reinforcing what they've learned in English because we're still talking about subjects and verbs and direct objects. We're still talking about prepositional phrases, possession, adjectives, and agreeing with nouns. We're talking about all of these same concepts, but we're looking at it in another language. And as you said, when you have to look at a language that's not your own, one that you can't take for granted, oh, I know that, it forces you to slow down and take a closer look at it. And so I think it makes their understanding of English better at the same time that it's building a foundation for them to begin reading Latin. And really, if you look at how language is taught historically, even just a couple of hundred years ago with our founding fathers, they didn't wait until they were 13, 14 in high school to begin studying language. They began studying Latin in their grammar school years or very shortly thereafter. You know, about 7, 8, some of them, or certainly by 10, they're studying Latin or other languages. And, you know, you look at John Adams, I believe it was at Harvard at 16. So I think we greatly underestimate what these young minds are capable of doing and what they love to do also. They really enjoy it.